The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Thank you for joining us here on The Shepherd. This is Mike Gilland, and what a privilege it is to have a man that I've known only from afar. I've met Gary Crawford at an event at Westside Baptist in Gainesville a number of years ago, back when I was involved with leading worship there at that great church for the National Day of Prayer. You and I had a chance to greet each other and talk very briefly along with my good friend Phil Corson. But it is my honor to have Gary Crawford as my guest today on Afternoons with Mike. Welcome, Gary.
Hey, thank you, Mike. I'm delighted and excited about sharing this time with you today.
Well, you know, it is always a joy to get to talk with people who have been as instrumentally involved in the kingdom of God as what you've been. You've been in Gainesville for a number of years. Looking forward to hearing that story of how you ended up getting to Westside. And a while back, you transitioned from there, and I'd love to hear you share about that. And you're very involved right now in a number of facets for the kingdom of God and missions work and other areas as well. You've done some pulpit preaching, I know, in that area, still up in Alachua County, and excited about that. So first of all, let's begin more at the beginning. How did you come to know the Lord, and where did you grow up?
Mike, I'm a native Floridian, would you believe?
Not too many of those.
And so I was born in Columbia County. I grew up in that county, in Union County. And, you know, when my dad, he was a hard worker. He came through the Depression. And because of his work ethic and his faith and love for his family, we had everything we needed and much of what we wanted. But at a younger age, you know, I still felt like there was something missing. And I come to understand from my friends, just watching them, they seemed to have something different than I did. I learned that it was Jesus Christ. And so one Sunday evening in a rural Baptist church, pastor preached, he gave the invitation, God spoke to my heart, and I placed my hand in his. I was baptized shortly thereafter and begin that journey with the Lord that has been an amazing adventure of love with him.
How old were you at this point?
Mike, when I gave my life to Christ, I was 11. And then when I was 18, I had a very significant rededication experience in my life. That was prompted by several things, but one was that I was 18. My mother was 34. She had a cerebral hemorrhage, and she went to be with the Lord. And that shook our world and caused me to begin thinking about the more significant things in life and eternity. And I ended up at a revival service at my home church, sitting on the back pew. This is interesting, Mike, sitting on the back pew. And don't really know, remember why I was there. I was there with my cousin, and we were sitting on the back row. Pastor preached, he gave the invitation, and during the invitation, he started walking back. And I'm looking around thinking, well, is he already walking to the door, or is he going somewhere else? But then I caught his eye, and he was walking toward me. Walked all the way back to the back of the church, where I was standing, placed his hand on my shoulder and said, son, are you right with God? And I lied. I said, yes, sir. And he said, okay, then. He took his hand off my shoulder, but God didn't. And before the invitation was over, I rededicated my life. And that was a turning point for me in my spiritual formation.
You know, a lot of people, they have things like that happen to them. And it's really hard to put into words just how important a significant event like that is in your life. Just thanking God for the obedience of that pastor who acted on what may have been to him an odd thing to do, or maybe a risky thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yet he did it. He was obedient to the Lord, and look at the outcome.
Yeah. It certainly marked my life, Mike, and I think set the stage for God to begin his work of calling me into ministry.
Mm. Mm. So how did you get into ministry yet? I know that process is normally just that. It's a process. It's rare that, you know, one day a light switch is on in a person's heart and mind and says, you're called to ministry, and the next day they're serving. That never happens. It's always a process. So how did that happen with you?
Yeah, Mike, it was probably a six-year process for me. But it started, you know, as God began to do a deeper work within me, and I became more engaged in my local church because I wanted to, because I could. I was making some of my own choices, you know, at 18, 19 years of age. And I loved that. And then we had a pastor there, and it was a different pastor at this time, but he'd been alluding to God's calling, in my life. And then that Sunday morning he preached. At the end of the service, I was walking out. He was standing at the back and greeting people. He said, "Hey, Gary, I need to be," he was a bivocational pastor. He said, "I need to be out tonight unexpectedly. Can you preach?" And that shocked me. It stunned me. And I can look back, and that was still one of the most miserable Sunday afternoons of my life.
Well, that's a pretty quick call.
It's like, okay, I'm not worthy to do this. I don't know what I'm doing.
There's not going to be 20 hours to prepare either.
That's right. So I just gave it my best shot, and the people were so very gracious. But that, I think, was kind of the second step in my considering a calling. Now, I wasn't intentionally moving toward a ministry calling. In fact, I was headed toward dentistry. So the next several years, as I pursued my dentistry, God was working in my life regarding ministry collaterally. I was involved as a part-time minister of youth, part-time minister of music. I was at the University of West Florida in Pensacola, and God was working marvelously, really, in my life, in ministry, and my wife. But I loved biology, and I thought I'd make a good dentist.
Hmm.
But Mike, here's how it came to how God brought it to a head. So I'd finished all my pre-dental work. I had applied to dental schools, and I was ready to make that move. I had one last meeting with the faculty committee. So I knew that one of the questions they were going to ask me, why do you want to go into ministry? And I knew if I told them what they wanted to hear, I'd have to lie about that. And so sure enough, it was not long in the interview. Why do you want to go into ministry? Into dentistry. And I said, well, you know, I love people, and I think I would be good as a dentist. And it would give me a flexible schedule and a good income to maximize my time in the local church.
Wow, you were articulating that even then.
I did. That was almost my exact words. And there was a long pause around that huge oak table among the faculty. And finally, one of the faculty members spoke up. He was actually one of my chemistry professors. And he used the analogy of a violin. And what he meant was, Gary, you need to go where your heart is. So we finished the interview, and as I left the meeting, I affirmed God's call in my heart. I went home, I told my wife, And she smiled and she said, I know.
Wow.
And so then, with that change of direction in my heart, I didn't pursue dentistry any longer. I finished my degree in biology. I taught for a couple of years in Milton, Florida, as I was serving as minister of youth and music. And then my first little pastorate there in Shamukla outside of Pensacola.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that the call to ministry meant the call to prepare for ministry. And so we prepared to go to Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, of course, you know, I'm leaving out a lot of the story, but here's one of the significant things. I had two children come along with the latter years of study at the university. So we, Frieda and I, and my late wife, we built a house and we were going to sell it to move to Texas to go to school. And so she was teaching, I was teaching, we resigned our jobs, thinking we'd get a little bit of profit from the house to sustain us the first year in Texas. We came home to see our family in the Lake City area. Wow. And I preached in my home church that night. And when I got home to my mother-in-law's, we got a call from friends in Milton, said, your home is burning. What do you most want saved?
Oh, no.
And so, so we went back the next morning and it wasn't burned down, but it was substantially burned. And I sat on the steps and I cried.
Oh.
I said, God, I don't understand. This was part of the plan. And the short of that is the deacon in my church where I was serving, one of the deacons loaned me $600, said, my wife and I, we're going to go with you out there. So we loaded what furniture we had left. The persons, Mike, who wanted to buy the house, we didn't have a contract. We had an interest agreement.
Mm-hmm.
They still bought the house. And I think because, you know, they could remodel it the way, rebuild it the way they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
However, we had to make the house payment on that house. We had to pay for a place for them to store their furniture. We had to pay for a place to live in Fort Worth, Texas. And that first year, my young son, when we moved out, he was about 6 months of age. He was in the hospital three times, almost lost him each time. It was a harrowing year. I was a full-time student. My wife was teaching, and we were making those multiple payments. And at the end of the year, I said, Lord, I don't know how I can sustain this any longer. So I think I need to head back to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next week I got a call from a church outside of Fort Worth. And within a month, I was there as pastor. And so I was pastor, full-time student. My wife was at home with the children. And God sustained us in that ministry for 5 years. It was a wonderful 5 years, but it was kind of a boot camp in ministry as well.
That's a beautiful campus there at Southwestern, isn't it?
Yeah, it truly is, Mike.
I've been there in that campus and love it.
Yeah. So, Mike, you know, looking back, I would say one of my early lessons was God makes a way when there seems to be no way. Just keep moving forward and he'll meet our obedience with his grace and strength.
That's so true, Gary.
And it's interesting, Mike, that at the end of that 5 years, when I'd been a full-time pastor, full-time student, dad, and we'd done a lot of demographic work within the church and in the community, we knew growth was coming. So we spent a year putting all that together, cast vision. And the church said, in essence, you know, y'all have done really good work, but we're not interested. And because it was going to mean some hard decisions about, you know, preparing for growth in the church and community. And that put this young novice pastor in a spiritual tailspin. Like, how can I seek to lead when it's been so clearly stated that we don't want to do this? So I struggled for 3 months agonizingly, sought counsel, and finally decided to resign. And I stood that Sunday morning. I resigned. The church stood not to accept my resignation, which made it more difficult. But I did resign. I didn't have anywhere to go. And in seeking counsel of one of my, well, he was my doctoral supervisor, he said, don't resign without somewhere to go. You'll be marked in your ministry, Gary. And I understood what he meant, but I said, Doc, you know, if God's leading me to do this, he'll provide.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing I sensed was God wanted me back in Florida. So would you believe that with $600 in my pocket again,
that seems to be the right number.
And I headed back home with my family. Now my children, 5 years older, and my dad helped me, provided one of his trucks to help me move back to Florida. And for those 6 months, I continued my doctoral work. My wife got a job teaching. I would speak here and there. And God then opened the door to Westside.
Mm-hmm. Now, and Westside is that a different location back then?
Well, it's in Gainesville,
yes.
Florida.
Yes.
And yeah, it was on the east side of I-75 back in 81.
Yes.
It's now on the west side of I-75.
So when you got there, it was nothing like what it is now. And I think that it's so difficult at times for people who would not have known you, would not have known the story of Westside, to really appreciate what it takes for a church to go through the transformation that Westside has gone through under your leadership and under your love. Under your care, yours and Frida's. And I know that those people loved you and still do love you dearly. And that's going to be something that we're talking about greatly in the next segment. But what year was it that you came back to that Westside location where it was back in that time? What year was that?
Yeah, well, it was 1980, and we arrived back in the Lexi area in January of 80. And then I was called to Westside in July of 81.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Mike. No, it was January of 81. And then I was called to Westside in July of 81.
Okay. Well, this is very exciting to hear how you got to Gainesville. And of course, you mentioned being in the central, north central Florida area anyway, from up in Live Oak and Lake City areas and all of that. But I know that was an exciting time, and we're going to hear more about Gary's involvement in seeing this wonderful church, Westside Baptist, Gainesville, Florida, as it grew. Coming up in a moment when we return, this is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. I'm on the line with a man that I just dearly respect. His name is Gary Crawford. For years was the lead pastor at Westside Baptist Church. And if you missed segment one, he was telling us a little bit of his story, which involved what I think every homeowner just dreads the thought of, and very few of us have ever gone through it. But Gary and his wife Frida went through a house fire while they were away, and we never kind of tied up what was the cause. Share the cause of that fire.
Mike, it was lightning.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. We were away. There was a storm in that area, and it was lightning. And yeah. We had some of our good friends, you know, who became aware of it. They're the ones that made the call and said, what do you most want us to try to save? And so the church family there where we were, They saved much of our most precious things.
Mm. Mm. You know, that is something that has happened to people, and sometimes they have time to do that, to save something. And we have friends who've gone through an ultimate complete loss. including photographs and precious, memories of all sorts and furniture that meant a lot. And, you know, at the end of the day, all of that can be taken away, just like what happened to you, with seemingly what is called by the insurance companies as an act of God. Isn't it funny how they'll attribute God to that?
Yes, it is, and not other things.
But some disaster that has been brought about in an inexplicable way, it's an act of God. But, you know, the truth of it is, it was an act of God. It was part of your story, part of his loving leadership that blasted you out of the area where you were to get you into Texas for that season. And I've found this to be true, and it sounds like you have too. At times, it takes some momentous blasting to get us from move from one area to the other, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, Mike. And, you know, I think God is always trying to increase our trust and move our dependency from anything other than himself as the one source of all other things. And while I was depending on the sale of that home to provide for that first year in our new place, location in Fort Worth, God said, well, you're depending on the home. You need to more clearly depend on me, and I'll show you some different options of getting the same thing accomplished. And but in the midst of it, I will improve your trust in me.
Yeah, that's always that hidden little gem that you don't know is coming and you can't see it from afar. But by God's grace, he makes it happen. Now, when you went to West Side, you know, I think every pastor goes through this. Every pastor that is starting a church or arrives at an existing church, there's this thing called vision that is important. I think every pastor in leading every church needs to have a sense of what God has called them to do at that particular location. When you look back, what were your thoughts in those early years being at Westside?
Well, at first, Mike, I was a little bit concerned. I didn't want to repeat an experience of a church not being focused on the mission, which is to share the gospel, reach people, make disciples, grow leaders. And I shared that openly with the committee, and they said, no, we're ready to engage. And they meant it. And so for the next 34 years, there was continual growth in the church. And I consider that, you know, the great privilege of my life to serve as pastor of the Westside Baptist Church family. They were so gracious as we learned together, engaged the mission, and we saw God do absolutely incredible things, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When you look back, Gary, what would be some of the significant milestones that you would have experienced there?
Well, I think the first one would have to be within myself, Mike. I learned a milestone was when I first clearly saw that in order to stay at a place and lead, I must grow myself as a person and as a leader. And I think that recognition helped me stay the long tenure at Westside.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing was that you have to apply the organizational principles that support the spiritual mission. That became increasingly clear to me. A third thing was that, you know, Christ said the two great commandments, love God, love one another. And you have to love your people. And you have to walk with them and care for them to the very best of your ability. And I think people recognize when we love them, we recognize when they love us. And I often said to our people, you know, if we can't love one another, we can't love a lost community and world. And so that drove our unity, you know, across the years. And And God greatly blessed in our old location. There were times that we had six services over a weekend. Relocation was a major thing. It was a $14 million relocation. We drove by 600 the first year after relocation. Mm-hmm. That year we had 26 mission trips on every continent but one. And Mike, in 99, we transitioned. I mean, we relocated in 2002. And in 99, my wife, a late wife, was diagnosed with multiple myeloma.
Mm-hmm.
That became a 10-year journey that she lived out with great faith and courage. She went through two stem cell transplants. After the second one, she got into what they call good partial remission. She went back, finished her PhD at the university, taught as adjunct professor for a couple of years before it came back. And that's a wonderful story in itself. A couple of years after she went to be with the Lord, I wrote a book entitled My Pilgrimage of Love.
Mm.
And the book about grief. And grief can help us or harm us. And so that was the book about how God walked with me through the journey of grief. But it was during, it was during that time, Mike, that the relocation was taking place. And only God, looking back, only God could have sustained me as pastor. And the people were so very supportive and helpful. But she would spend, several months at a time in Little Rock, Arkansas. That was the place of treatment for that particular disease at that time because of the database there. But she went through that second stem cell transplant. And on the day we were scheduled to relocate, we got permission from the city. We got the support of law enforcement and hundreds of people, members of Westside, walked west from our old location to our new location, led by one carrying the cross. And Frida was part.
Wow.
She was part of that.
Wow.
And so God really favored that relocation and that ministry. One of the miracles, Mike, was we relocated on time and under budget. How about that?
That's a miracle in and of itself.
Yeah. And over the years, another wonderful thing is God called 150 persons into vocational ministry and missions. And the last time we tried to take an accounting of that, they were serving in 14 states and 12 countries.
Hmm. And you mentioned that in that season that you guys were sending out groups that were take missions trips.
Yes.
On every continent save one.
That's right.
And that is such an amazing thing. And, when I hear this story about what's going on while, I've known for years, and anyone that's ever worked in a church or worked in a ministry team that is a part of a building program, everyone knows that there's just something odd about a building program. It can be simultaneously, and usually is, the best of times and the worst of times all at once. And what is it, Gary, even your experience, that makes a building plan that makes it just so challenged? Is it just that the enemy doesn't want it to happen, or what do you think that is? It's just like it brings out every trial here in the middle of your big move. Your wife is diagnosed with multiple myeloma. What are your thoughts about building programs?
Well, I think if you're going to be faithful to the mandate, which is to share the gospel, reach people for Christ, you have to have facilities that will accommodate that. Now, I think that's the key. Your facilities must accommodate the mission, or the facilities can become the mission itself.
Yes.
However, my conviction as a pastor was and is that the church exists for the purpose of being outside of itself, to reach people for Christ, to carry the mandate to the ends of the earth. And as we are committed to the mission, then God will empower what we need on location in order to carry out his work. And so, yeah, I mean, Satan is very active during those times. I mean, if you ever want to ruffle the feathers of Satan, focus on evangelism and missions.
How true is that's very well said and very, very true. And I think that is part of why so many churches that are on the grow, they hit that pocket where they're growing into a new building program. And Gary, it's so clear to those that know anything about Gainesville at all to know that season for Westside was not a mission ending or a vision ending process. It just went forward from there. And that is just such a statement of faith and a commendation for the leaders, you included, obviously, is chiefly you, but the people that you had serving at that church. It has become such a beacon of light of the gospel to the whole Alachua County area and beyond. And you have overseen what turned out to be a substantial church with a substantial vision and heart and mission. And I don't think it can be anything better said than that the church building needs to not be the mission. The church building needs to be the facility that facilitates the mission.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, Mike, I was listening to you there a moment, I think there are several lessons that surfaced pretty quickly for me from those years. One, I would phrase, move forward on your knees. Keep prayer first. Another is, and I kind of alluded to this before, you personally have to grow to stay. Your church has to grow organically in order to grow numerically. It has to have a clear vision derived from its purpose that's clearly communicated and owned with a strategy and constant development of the people. And then I would say, what we do follows who we are. We form good habits, and then they form us and our ministries. I think effectiveness is in direct proportion to our commitment to excellence and hard work. And we need to keep better persons around us than we know ourselves to be, so we can keep growing ourselves.
Mm.
And the highest calling of leadership is to help others find and develop their potential and their calling. And Mike, you would know that behind all of those things is just loving the Lord, loving your people more than your ministry or your career.
I tell you what, you've just made a statement that I don't think I'll ever forget. What we do follows who we are.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of people, I do believe, try to export something that is not already imported into their own life.
Yes. Yeah.
And that just says a whole lot right there about why Westside stayed true. It wasn't like Gary was without challenges. You had plenty of challenges going on simultaneously, even into the move into this wonderful facility, which was going to facilitate ministries of all sorts for a big area of Gainesville. But you had more than your share of things that kept you marching on your knees, as you said.
Yeah. But, you know, Mike, the people were full of faith, and they were deeply committed and supportive and engaged. That made all the difference. And then during this time when my wife was out in Little Rock, you know, my heart would be so torn. Like, I would need to be there with her. I would need to be here for pivotal matters to be in focus. And she would say, you know, Gary, I can't be there for them, but I can release you to be there for them. Please go be with them. I will be okay. It was her faith, her courage, her strength that enabled me to remain and lead in those circumstances and during those years. Otherwise, Mike, I would have forfeited my ministry, I am sure. And I think I learned out of that, you know, capture your pain, harness it for good. Don't waste it. Life is life, and it can be extremely difficult. So capture it. I don't know if you're familiar with Sam Chan and his book, Leadership Pain, but he says that our leadership level is determined by our capacity to manage our pain.
And that is a great thought.
It truly is. It truly is. So then if we want to continue to grow as leaders, we must continue to grow in the ability to capture and use our pain for good.
Wow. Gary, I'm just thinking of the people who are listening right now that may be going through a time of pain. It could be a family member. It could be their spouse. It could be a child. It could be a friend who's going through something very difficult. And I really love what you've said about the fact that we can, if we're not careful, we can waste the opportunities that the Lord allows to come our way that are challenges. You know, we're promised in the Word, aren't we, that there's going to be severe trials. We're going to go through trials. We are not promised a life of ease or a life of comfort. What we're promised is a life of trials and yes. Difficulties.
Yes.
But it's how and the process that we walk through those things that's going to determine whether or not those things brought about the intended good that comes. And clearly, my friend, you've done that. I'm talking with Gary Crawford. If you've just tuned in and you wondered who this wise man is, he is a seasoned man of God who has many, many wonderful years of serving the Lord and has learned the faithfulness of God. And he's still at work for the kingdom of God. We're going to talk about what Gary Crawford, who served for many years and before transitioning out as the pastor at Westside Baptist in Gainesville, Florida. We're going to find out what he's doing now. And I think you're going to be very encouraged by it. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're listening to The Shepherd. So enjoying my chat on the line today with Gary Crawford. Gary spent many years as the lead pastor at Westside Baptist in Gainesville, Florida, and he transitioned a while back and is now serving the Lord in some really critical ways. Still a lover of missions, still a lover of discipleship, and is very active. You've served as a kind of an interim position in some churches and doing a wonderful job doing that. But I do want to go back for a moment to something that in every man's life, it's so critical, and that is the great loss that you went through with Frida and losing her in the midst of all of this and the impact that that had on not only you, but the church as well. Share a little bit about that.
Okay, Mike, and I did kind of share that story in my book, Pilgrimage of Love, that addresses the grief. But perhaps one of the greatest insights that I learned during that season and that experience was that such a loss changes not some things, but everything in one's life in one way or another. You know, as a person, I'd lost a number of loved ones across the years. And as a pastor, I knew the pain of loss when it happens because of walking with so many during these years. But what I didn't clearly understand was the domino effect that affects the life of the person for the rest of their lives. Because it changes everything in one way or another. It changes all relationships in one way or another. And I think from that, you know, I learned that when I see people experience loss, and I just did a funeral last week, and it was sad, and I understand the immediate pain of the loss, but my mind now goes to the changes that are going to occur in the years to come and how they will be managed and responded to and the choices that would need to be made. And then I think I learned that that being judgmental is just a foolish thing. What is needed is compassion and effort to learn, because loss of one kind or another is always coming our way. And then, you know, after those years, I think another really significant discovery for me was I learned that until loneliness becomes your friend, you're not ready for another another similar relationship. But once your healing is so that your loneliness is your pain, I'm good. Then you have something to offer again. And that was a hard, hard journey for me, but God allowed that to happen.
I'm sure that her passing, Frida's passing, did indeed touch not only your life, but in your family's lives, but also the life of the church as well. And what were some of the significant things that you remember right after she passed away?
Well, for one thing, Mike, I didn't know if I could stay there because he was everywhere, if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And but God allowed that. So it was 5 years, good years of stabilizing for me and good years for Westside. But changes were occurring and I was seeking God's guidance. And so on a mission trip in Africa, I knew one day I'd be out in the bush by myself. So I took my yellow pad and my Bible and a pen. And I said, Lord, I just need to hear a fresh word from you. What do you want of my life? And Mike, by the end of that day, he gave me a word. He gave me a 3-year vision. And that was rooted in leading the church in transition to a new pastor and leading myself into a new season of ministry. And that transition happened. It happened in that time period. It culminated when we were celebrating our Westside's 50th anniversary and completing our 11th consecutive financial campaign to embrace the growth that the Lord had granted. It was an awesome benediction. And I think looking back, what I learned was that I needed to make an internal transition before I could lead an organizational transition. I learned that the transition vision needs to be clear and communicated well, and that I needed team around me to see that happen. And you know, Mike, I don't know if this is recognized very often. Maybe your experience will inform this a bit. But I felt that corporate grief needed to be addressed. And I concluded that unidentified and unaddressed corporate grief, i.e. the body of the church, can lead to brokenness as in our personal lives as well. So we actively engaged that. You know what I didn't see coming? I didn't see the emotional roller coaster coming through that process of transition. I didn't, you never get over a people that you loved and pastored for 34 years any more than you get over personal loss. You learn to live with gratitude and trust for God of the future and for the church and for yourself. And, so that embracing the new season was quite a transition internally for myself, but God began to lead me. We had founded Amazon Vision Ministries. It's a vision God gave me 20 years ago now, along with co-founder Joe Fincher, who went to be with the Lord just a few months ago. And so it's a work in the West Amazon Basin of Brazil. And now we have reached, after 18 years, the far basin, nudging Peru and Colombia. So I gave attention to that. And then I began to focus. Are you familiar with Halftime?
No, I'm not.
Well, there's a book entitled Halftime by Bob Buford, and it's about changing seasons of life. It's like going from, in his words, moving from success to significance. And so that's a story we can talk about another time, but I ended up at a halftime institute in Dallas, Texas, 27-hour intensive. And that's where I was introduced to coaching, the coach approach. And from there, God led me into professional coaching. I'm a leadership performance coach. And that has been a focus of my attention, along with the formation of Global Missions 365 that my present wife, Ingrid, and I work together in leading now. We have 13 partnerships in 7 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the focus now of ministry.
And it's a great growing thing, too. And the thing that I'm so touched by is that one of the things that has not changed with these things, and you did mention that several years after Frieda's passing, you did remarry, and you're now married to, I think you said her name is Ingrid?
Uh-huh, yes, Ingrid.
And that's, congratulations on that. That's wonderful. I'm so happy for you, Gary. But, you know, the truth of it is that what has not been lost upon you, Gary, is that your love for just the very simple thing about ministry is discipleship. And that, to me, is one of the nuts and bolts, simplest term equations that we are all called in our life to be a part of, and that is to make disciples.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I know, what I hear about you is that you're still involved, and even in talking with you this week, we had one of our earlier times set aside because of the fact that you're just in relationship with people to this day, the kind of relationship that still changes your schedule from time to time.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, that love for discipling one another and being there for one another and comforting one another, regardless of whether you're speaking to a group of now people who are, you're coaching through life and in your most recent book on leadership, or whether or not you're just sitting and talking about the things of God with somebody who's just lost a parent, that is something that is never lost as an important thing, is it?
Indeed. Amen.
What do you see happening right now in the church, kind of across the country right now, Gary? What, the impact of COVID has been great. What are you seeing churches having to rally and trust God for?
Well, in my coaching and relationship with churches, and the same thing is true with businesses, actually, Mike. My experience has been with churches who have kind of embraced COVID as a challenge to learn new ways and methods of carrying out the mission. Those churches have done well. And so when they began asking the questions, these are our limitations, but what does this make possible? Now, that's an incredibly important question. What does this make possible? And so churches in which leadership has, they've gone to their knees, they've gone to their people, they've said COVID doesn't change the mission, it may change the method and the means. How are we going to continue focused on ministry to our people, to our community, and to the world? And you know what? God has given an answer. And I can take you to churches that have actually grown through COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And they've come out stronger now where we are in this process. And the same thing is true of businesses. If they ask the right question and they search for the right answers, then they have found ways to carry out their mission in the community.
Well, I tell you what, we're all being challenged with that. And a lot of churches have had to get on the quick learn cycle to start streaming services and hold Zoom meetings. And other churches were a little bit more prepared. We're doing some of that already, but it is the great equalizer at the end of the day. And that's something that we're having to do. Gary, how can people find your books? Are they available on Amazon?
Yes, they're all three books. The first one is on marriage and family back in 06. Second one, Pilgrimage of Love. And the third one is Clarify, Simplify, Amplify, an approach to discovering God's dream for your life and seeing it fulfilled. It is available on Amazon or can be ordered through various bookstores as well, Mike. And my website, GaryCrawfordLeadership.com, is information there as well.
GaryCrawfordLeadership.com, that's easy enough to remember. Or just look up the author Gary Crawford on Amazon and get a hold of these books. Gary, I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the near future. Thank you for being with me today.
Max, my joy. Really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for the privilege.
Well, friends, thank you as well for being with us today on Afternoons with Mike, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.